We're in a series right now called Room for Doubt. And this series that we've been studying, one of the ideas has been, how do we help people overcome their periods of doubt? How do we help people overcome feelings of anxiety about their faith and questions that come when people challenge that faith? You may have saw the film, God's Not Dead, right? It's a story of a young man who goes to college, and the professor basically wants him to sign a paper that says, hey, I believe there is no God. God is dead. He's not real. And the young man refuses to do that, and an interesting story plays out. If you haven't seen the film, it's an interesting film to watch. And it kind of shapes or talks about a narrative that says sometimes when young people go to college, their faith really does get challenged in big ways. So what do we do with that? And how do we handle those kinds of challenges? One of the reasons we're doing this series is we understand that that does happen to young people, that their faith will be challenged, that the credibility of the Bible will be put at stake and the things that the Bible says. And so how can we make sure our young people are prepared for those kinds of challenges? And so we want to equip parents and grandparents and the young people themselves with some answers to those hard questions, because there really are answers. There's reasons to believe what we believe. Last week, we did an in-depth study, right? We looked at a lot of things last week about the call for a creator and the idea that God had created the earth and why we can have confidence in that. Well, today I want to take on this challenge that people sometimes raise about the Bible. And the question is the Bible reliable? There are a couple of interesting ways that this gets challenged. And the first one is an idea that says, well, the Bible was written too late to be accurate or reliable history. Meaning, if something was written hundreds of years after these events happened, how could we really know that they were accurate, information that we got? How would you know that? But the New Testament, the truth is it was not written hundreds of years after the events. And so I want us to look at this a little bit, because this is a claim that gets made, but it's not a true claim. In fact, the Bible tells us something very different. And we can have great reasons to believe that the Bible is authentic, genuine, and that it was written close to the time of the events. For example, the first thing you need to understand about the New Testament is that it's based primarily on direct eyewitness testimony. It's important. It's written by people who saw these events happen, and it's written while these people are alive. They're the ones who are eyewitnesses to the event. And consider this character, John, one of the disciples, John who was with Jesus, and listen to how he writes his epistle, 1 John 1:1. This is what John said. He said, "That which was from the beginning, which we have heard, which we have seen with our own eyes, which we have looked at and our hands have touched, this we proclaim." He says, I'm an eyewitness, right? I'm an eyewitness of these things. I was there. I touched them. I saw them. I was physically present when these events happened. He's saying, I'm an eyewitness. Other parts of the New Testament were compiled by writers who got their information directly from eyewitnesses. The author Luke, the great historian, as an example. Luke wrote his gospel and also the book of Acts. And he made it a point of meticulously researching his information before he compiled the book and getting eyewitnesses' accounts. Listen to what it says in the book of Luke, chapter 1. He says, many people have set out to write an account about the events that have been fulfilled among us. They used eyewitness reports circulating among us from the early disciples. He writes, having carefully investigated everything from the beginning, I also have decided to write a careful account so that you can be certain of the truth of everything you were taught. Isn't that awesome? Luke said, I was careful so that you could be certain. It's clear that these writers were making a claim that they were eyewitness to actual events, or at a minimum had obtained their information from eyewitnesses. The second point you need to understand about these eyewitness accounts, they were written down early. In fact, it's now widely accepted, even among skeptical historians, that the four Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, were all written within the first century. And we have strong reason to believe they were all completed before 70 AD. Christian New Testament scholar Craig Blomberg explains, for example, that the book of Acts was written also by Luke, and it ends apparently unfinished. Paul, the central figure of the last half of that book, is under house arrest in Rome, and the book abruptly just halts. What happens to Paul? We don't find out from Acts, probably because the book was finished before Paul died. That means, Blomberg continues, Acts cannot be dated any later than A.D. 62. Having established that we can then move backwards from Acts to his previous writing, Luke, which was before that, and Luke includes material from the book of Mark, that means that Mark was written even closer to the events of Jesus' death. If you allow maybe a year for each of those, you end up with the Gospel of Mark being written no later than about A.D. 60, maybe even in the late 50s. So if Jesus was put to death in A.D. 30 or A.D. 33, we're talking about a maximum gap of 30 years or so. And Blomberg says, historically speaking, that is like a news flash. It's very quick. Now, at one time, it was fashionable for scholars to say that the New Testament was written much, much later, hundreds of years after the events. For example, Cambridge professor and liberal theologian John A.T. Robinson once made that claim. But then he did a lot of additional research, and he made a dramatic turnaround. In fact, he later repudiated his previous beliefs and wrote a book entitled Redating the New Testament, which corrected what he and others had been teaching. He said that many people had approached the Bible with a tyranny of unexamined assumptions or an almost willful blindness, that they had only saw what they wanted to see instead of listening and looking at the facts as they really were presented. So going back to the big picture, it's clear that various books in the entire New Testament were written when many people were still alive at the time who could have refuted anything they said. And they could vouch for its accuracy, they could challenge any stories that were inaccurate. Let's put this in our own context. I'm not going to ask for a show of hands, but a lot of you were alive in 1977. You could remember 1977. And if we go back, that's about as far back as it would be from the time that these books were written to the events that happened. And if they were written in that time period, that close to the events, you would remember things like in 1977, Elvis Presley died. Some of you will remember those events. You'll remember where you were when you found out. I was at the Ohio State Fair. Some of you will remember other events, right, from that period of history. You'll remember there were things like the movie Star Wars came out in 1977. Or you might remember, and you could say with some accuracy, right, that the Apple II computer came out, and you could remember the very first computers. Or some will remember that Jimmy Carter became president. Now, clearly, those events are remembered by many people who are here today. Historically speaking, it's just not that long ago. Now, it may seem really long if you're only 10. If you're 70, you know that 40 years goes by like that. It's not a long time. And obviously, if somebody today tried to rewrite the history and the details around those events, it would be pretty quickly detected and refuted. And people would write, no, they have their facts wrong. Right? Other contemporaries would say, they got that all backwards. Now, this is what's unbelievable. When we go back to this early period of the first 100 years, we don't find any scholars, any other writers in antiquity challenging the truth of what the Bible says. No one factually challenged what was written. I just want you to understand, friends, you can lay your doubts down on this one. The New Testament books were written very close to the events that they describe, and we can have great confidence that it records the events both accurately and in a trustworthy manner. But before we go on to our second challenge, let me mention there is another related topic to these early gospel writings. And a lot of people get confused because they've heard about some gospels called the Gospel of Thomas or the Gospel of Mary or the Gospel of Judas. And you would ask the question, well, why did the early church exclude those writings from the Bible? And the answer is this: the early church didn't exclude them because those writings were written hundreds of years after the event. They were written mostly around AD 175 or even later by members of a religious group of heretics known as the Gnostics. This means that the so-called lost gospels were authored by, they were not authored by biblical characters or even the names of the ones that they say, Mary, Thomas, or Judas, but they were authored by people trying to discredit the faith. So when someone tells you that they saw a news report that says the gospel of Thomas is authentic, in reality what they're saying is it is an authentic Gnostic gospel. It was written almost a century and a half after the time of Jesus and much later than the books of the New Testament. Put more plainly, these lost gospels are late forgeries that only claim to be gospels, books pretending to be something that they're not. Therefore, they're not something we need to worry about. Let me give you a second challenge that people raise about the Bible. You've heard this before. People say, well, the Bible's full of myths and stories and miracles that we really can't believe in any longer. They can't be believed by thinking people. It's too superstitious, they might say. When you hear that, you might ask the person this question that says that, so have you really investigated the evidence for and against the things and concluded that they could or did or didn't happen? Usually the answer will be something like this. They'll say, well, I don't need to do all of that because there's just no way those kinds of things could happen. But do you see what people do when they say things like that? In most cases, it means they've predetermined what they want to conclude. And often they do that without any investigation at all. It's not just a bad way to look at history or science. It's bad philosophy. It's called circular reasoning. And it reflects an anti-God bias and really reflects an old-fashioned prejudice against the Christian claims. And there are people who are prejudiced against faith and against the Bible without even really reading it and having the courage to follow the evidence of the Bible where it leads. You know, last week we saw some amazing evidence for an intelligent designer who designed the universe, who fine-tuned it to the exact degree. We talked last week a lot about the fact that there's a moral lawgiver who is perfectly good and who serves as the source and standard for objective moral principles. If you missed that message, I encourage you to go back and listen to it online or to listen to it through the iTunes store. But beyond all of these, there's a lot of other powerful evidence in the Bible that says the Bible can be trusted. For example, consider the prophecies. Isaiah chapter 53 in the Old Testament was written some 700 years before the crucifixion of Jesus. It says in that passage, he was pierced for our iniquities. It describes the idea of piercing and crucifixion centuries before the first crucifixion had occurred upon the earth. Psalms 22, written about 1,000 years before the death and time of Christ, describes Jesus suffering in detail when it says, a pack of villains encircles me. They pierce my hands and my feet. All my bones are on display. People stare and gloat over me. They divide my clothes among them. They cast lots for my garment. These are amazing descriptions of what was to come on the day of Jesus' crucifixion. And Micah 5:2 is one that's very fascinating. Hundreds of years ahead of its time, it prophesied the Messiah would be born in the tiny village of Bethlehem, just as it would later happen. And yes, Jesus really did heal people. He really did cast out demons. He really did walk on the water. He really did turn water into wine. None of his enemies ever denied that Jesus did any of those things. The evidence was too overwhelming. It's really important to remember as we read these texts, there are people who were constantly out to undermine what Jesus was doing. But they never challenged the miracles that he did. They never said it didn't happen. In fact, they would say something else. They'd say, sure, you healed that guy's withered hand, a reference to Matthew 12, 9 through 14. You healed his withered hand, but you did it on the Sabbath day. And that's just a big no-no, Jesus. You should have known better. But by blaming him for healing on the Sabbath day, they actually were confirming he healed on the Sabbath day. They believed and admitted in their own way he had actually done a miracle. Think of this. If a God like the one we gave evidence for last week really exists, it would not be difficult for that same God to turn water into wine, to do a miraculous healing, to have a virgin birth come to pass. I mean, if you can create the universe out of nothing in the fraction of a second, then calming a storm or causing Peter to catch a fish with a corn in its mouth is really child's play. In addition to these facts, there are many Bible stories that have been confirmed by sources outside of the Bible. For example, many of the New Testament claims were later reinforced by other accounts. Far from tearing it down or discrediting, they confirmed things that were written in those early accounts. In fact, these ancient writers all share confirmations of things written in the Bible. Thallus, by the Roman historians Tacitus and Suetonius, and the Jewish historian Josephus and others, all writing in the first century. In fact, according to historian Gary Habermas, author of the book Historical Jesus, there are at least 39 ancient sources outside of the Bible that provide over 100 facts about Jesus' life, teachings, death, and resurrection. And we don't have time to go into the rich truths of archaeology, but there is an abundance of archaeological evidence, things like the finding of the walls of Jericho collapsed around the city, finding the city of Sodom, the name of the people, the Hittites, and other discoveries that confirm the existence and the dates of Pilate, who put Jesus under trial, as well as the existence of many of the cities and places referred to in the Gospels. In fact, you're going to love this story. One skeptical archaeologist spent 30 years digging up and confirming, to his astonishment, detail after detail from the Bible. In fact, his name was Sir William Ramsay of Cambridge University. And he concluded that the author Luke had correctly identified 32 countries, 54 cities, and 9 islands without a single error. And in the end, Ramsay declared Luke to be a first-rate historian. Not only this, after 30 years of digging into the evidence, it impacted him so personally, he shocked the academic world when he gave up his atheism and put his faith in Christ, because the evidence was so overwhelming that the Bible was true. Friends, the Bible is not a book of myths. Rather, it is filled with verifiable facts that you can examine, that you can confirm, that you can stake your life upon. There's a third challenge that sometimes gets raised. Maybe you've heard this one. It's the one that says, well, the Bible can't be trusted because it's full of contradictions. When you hear those kinds of phrases, that it's chock full of mistakes or contradictions, one simple thing you can ask is this. When someone says that, just say, really? Can you tell me which specific mistake or contradiction you're asking about or you're talking about? Show me the one that bothers you the most. And generally, people won't have one. Generally, it's not one specific thing they can point to and say, hey, it's this thing that causes me so much grief and such a problem. It's because they haven't really studied it for themselves. They're just repeating some things they've heard others say. When that happens, it's a good thing to just gently stop and to say, hey, let's look at the Bible with an open mind. That said, some people will have specific passages they point to. And many of those purported conflicts are not that hard to answer. For example, they may point out that one of the Gospels indicates there was one angel at Jesus' tomb, while another Gospel says there were two angels at Jesus' tomb. Or they'll show that in one account, Jesus seems to have ridden on one donkey on the triumphal entry into Jerusalem, but in another account, it appears there were two that he was with. And so people might say something like this, well, how can you trust a book if it was written by people who couldn't even count angels or donkeys? They couldn't count from one to two. Here's a helpful rule of math you should remember whenever you read the Bible. Wherever there are two, there is also one. You see, the fact that one eyewitness only mentions a single angel or a single donkey doesn't mean there couldn't have been more than one. That writer is not commenting on how many there were in total. Rather, he's just indicating there were some. But then the other gospel writer goes into greater detail, saying exactly how many were actually there. This really isn't a problem. It would be like me leaving church today and telling my wife there was a guy in the congregation wearing a red sweater. Now, if my wife had noticed three guys that were wearing red sweaters, would she then accuse me of lying because I'd only mentioned one? Of course not. I would still be correct in saying there was a guy in a red sweater, but she would also be correct in saying, in more specific details, she saw three. The only way it would be a contradiction is if I said there was one and only one guy wearing a red sweater here this morning, in which case then my wife would have quite a discussion with me about how I was wrong and she was right. But that's not the case with the sweater example or with the angels or the donkeys either. Other things are sometimes called contradictions in the Bible are things where writers present descriptions or they give brief summaries or they use round numbers, or they use figures of speech, and so forth. The same way that we do today when we share information. In other words, they talked like we talked. Yet critics of the Bible often try to force a scientific and mathematical standard of precision on these ancient writers that we don't even live up to now. One other example is the apparent discrepancy between various eyewitness accounts. For example, there are minor differences in the descriptions of what happened on the very first Easter Sunday morning when Jesus rose from the dead. A couple of thoughts on this. While not every detail is easily harmonized, it doesn't diminish the fact that the Gospels all make it clear Jesus rose from the dead. We'll look at some of the evidence for the resurrection of Jesus next week, but the minor differences in detail do not take anything away from the story of the resurrection. For example, ask any reporter or detective, and they will tell you it is the nature of eyewitness accounts that there will always be minor and subtle differences. In fact, that's one way of determining whether the testimonies are authentic. Real eyewitness accounts always include differing perspectives and varying levels of detail. It's actually a problem when there's a report and everyone has exactly the same report. They remember exactly the same details. That's when investigators say, uh-oh, this testimony's been corroborated. They've met together to agree and get their stories together and straight. And it makes it less credible. The fact that different eyewitnesses share different things about these events actually makes the Bible more credible. The gospel reinforces its truth in so many ways. Much more could be said on alleged contradictions in the Bible, but let me acknowledge that not every single one is easily answered. But I would also remind you of this: the Bible has been affirmed over and over and over again. I think it's shown us ample ways that it is a reliable source of revelation from God, one that warrants our attention and our confidence. These things really were written that you can believe them, that you can have confidence in them. They came from the mouth of God through His Spirit to those eyewitnesses who were there, and God made sure that the things He wanted written down were written down. There's a last thing I want to talk about that some people sometimes say about the Bible. They'll say, well, the Bible's been corrupted over time. And this is an oft-repeated objective. People will say, you can't trust the Bible. It's been translated and retranslated so many times it's no longer reliable. One of the worst illustrations I've ever heard, you may have heard this illustration too about the Bible. People said, how do we get the Bible? And they'll say, well, it was like a game of telephone where a person whispers in one person's ear and then the next and the next and the next. And at the end of the game, right, the answer, what the last person thinks is true, is nothing like what the story starts with. But that has nothing to do with how we got the Bible. That's not how you look at the Bible. That's not how we got the Bible. That's not how it was written. It's a terrible illustration. You see, the Bible is not the end of some long chain of translation from one language to the next, say from Greek to Latin, Latin to German, and so forth. Rather, it is a direct translation from ancient manuscripts in the original languages, Hebrew for the Old Testament, Greek for the New. Every good translation goes back to the earliest and best documents, and based on many years of linguistic and cultural studies, puts what was written there into accurate language for people today to understand. The result of which is we can easily read and comprehend what was originally written by the Bible authors. Now, As is the case with all ancient writings, we do not have the original handwritten documents themselves, because those disintegrated long ago. But we do have reliable copies. What really makes the New Testament stand out is that we have so many more copies of it than of any other ancient work. And the copies that we have date back so much earlier than any other copies that we have. In other words, they date so much closer to the time of the original writings than any other manuscripts out there that it gives us great confidence the Bible is an accurate translation. In fact, Daniel Wallace said, "We have an embarrassment of riches for the reliability of the Bible compared to any other classical Greek or Latin writing. The average classical author's literary remains number no more than 20 copies." So think of that. Josephus, ancient writers, at most 20 copies from antiquity. By comparison, there are over 5,800 copies of the early Greek manuscripts of the New Testament. And there are about 20,000 more that were written in other languages in the early century, copied meticulously, translated meticulously. Dr. Wallace goes on to explain, we have more than 1,000 times of the manuscript evidence for the New Testament than we do for any other Greco-Roman author. This is amazing. And consider that many of the artifacts that we use to base those writings on antiquity of others date over 500 years after the event. And yet we have evidence in some of the manuscripts that we found, the earliest writings, that take us into the first century. Similar evidence shows the integrity and the reliability of the Old Testament text, including more recent discoveries such as copies of those texts like Isaiah found in the Dead Sea Scrolls. And these show that that text has been preserved with remarkable accuracy. This is the bottom line that I want you to understand. The Gospels, the Bible as we have it today, is accurate. It is a trustworthy rendition of the original biblical text. And we can read it with great confidence. And we can believe what it originally said. So let's summarize this way. The New Testament was written early. It presents reliable historical evidence for the activities of Christ and God.